can also say.
I'm not responsible.
We're recording also.
Yeah, all right, we're good.
All right, let's tag it, Mike, you want to?
It's March 20th, 2018. The University of West Florida Board of Trustees and University of West Florida Chapter of the United Faculty of Florida. Collective bargaining, session two.
Should we say names or?
Sure.
Baron Dickinson.
Mike Matamore.
Dan Lucas.
Kim LaDuff.
Remy Gujon.
John Fink.
Dean DePalmer.
Enid Siskin.
Last time we met, Jonathan, you had articulated a desire to have us sort of do a mutual exchange of what articles, besides wages, benefits, and nine, that the two of us would be taking up in this round of negotiations. And we have sort of a bit of a form of that. What we would like to do is, we know of one article that we want to open, but okay, we're not convinced of this. We're not at a place where we know what our second article would be.
Okay.
So we're willing to do sort of a blind exchange of one article.
Okay.
And then we both reserve the right to have another article at a later date, if that's good with you.
We'll caucus about that. Was there a time limit? Were you envisioning a time limit on when you could articulate when that second article?
I think we'll be able to do it next time.
Okay.
It's just that we have right. a couple that we're looking at, and okay. we're just not sure which of those, since we're limited only to.
Okay.
We're going to put on the table.
Okay, we'll caucus about that in a
okay.
second. Were there other things that... did you have? We put forward the benefits proposal about face retirement and talked about that. Have you had any further discussions about that or any?
Yeah, we have something to talk about with regard to everything else that was put on the table last time. With regard to face retirement, we're still looking at that.
Okay.
Although our initial reaction would be this: if we were to adjust that face retirement, we're looking also at. Whether there's any ramifications for the Florida retirement system and the State Department of Management Services and whether steps have to be taken to amend the plan.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we would ask you to think about and maybe even make a suggestion is if we went off the age that's currently in the contract, we would not want to just uncap it so that there would be no age whatsoever limit. We would rather consider possibility of a different age.
Okay.
So that someone might be able to take advantage of the program at a later age.
Okay.
And so if you have thoughts about that, maybe you have thought about it already.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at with phase retirement.
Okay.
With the issue of Article 9. What I've heard you say is that you would entertain going in either direction of a promotional process or an evaluative process, and we prefer an evaluative process. So we would like to talk about the design of how instructors would be come up for this special type of evaluation, go through a process, and then culminate in a compensation
okay.
event. We've talked about this before, and I don't know if, I forget where we landed on it, but we talked before also about the potential of consolidating the titles of instructor.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Did we not do that because we didn't know which one we wanted?
Well, in one of the iterations last year, when we were still talking about the promotion component, right, mm-hmm. not the evaluative component, we discussed it that at the time, when they went through that promotion, that would be the vehicle to consolidate titles, right? So they would be, instructors and lecturers would be promoted to instructor two, right? Or associate instructor, something like that, right? So that was the vehicle for consolidation. And I know when we've reviewed this in the past, there's no clear employment distinction between instructors and mm-hmm. lecturers, right? Historically, lecturers have had a terminal degree and instructors have had not. Not necessarily at UWF, but right. institutionally or nationally. But when we talked about that consolidation, it was only in the promotion structure. We hadn't talked about the consolidation in an evaluation structure.
It's just something I'm bringing up if we want to further that conversation. It seems to us that institutionally today at the University of West Florida, there's not a distinction between the instructor or the lecturer, and I believe some colleges are heavily with the use of one or the other.
Sure.
So.
Okay.
But we're not trying to carve people out of this process, but maybe if we do focus on this process, it's the time to have that conversation about whether there should be a title consolidation.
Okay. I think the inclusive model that we would look at is this would be inclusive of the same individuals who are currently in the multi-year contract structure, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's inclusive of instructors, lecturers, research associates, and the library staff is included in the multi-year contract structure, but they're not eligible for the additional $1,000 because potentially every 6 years, because they have the SPE process for compensation.
Okay.
Right. So it would be, that's kind of the inclusive group. Our primary concerns would be neither to carve people out of the compensation process or to potentially carve them out of unit, right?
We're not interested in that either. Right. And so if we look at this evaluative process for, let's say we talk about evaluative process for an instructor, we're talking about instructor, lecturer, research
associate,
and the fourth one was?
The library faculty, they're involved. They have, they would not, most likely not be involved in the evaluation process because they're already in the SPE process.
Okay.
But they receive the multi-year contract structure, right? Because they're on 1 year contract, so they're in that. But they don't receive the financial component on the multi-year structure. Now there's a couple of other, one of the questions we have to ask, since we negotiated that the SPE structure last time, we included the new position codes for clinical assistant professors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there was discussion, and those are non-tenure aligned faculty, but there was discussion about, are they gonna go through a promotion process or an evaluation process? So that's one of the things that we would need to figure out, is where the clinical faculty fits in.
Okay.
And there's one or two positions that are the associate ends, assistants end, right? And that's a weird title name, but that's the actual title of it, is associate ends. So I think we have maybe two of those left. And then there's one faculty member, to my knowledge, who is an assistant professor, non-tenure or promotion eligible, who is currently kind of outside of either process, right? And so we would need to figure out, should this faculty member elect, and there's already language in the contract that you can elect to move from an assistant or associate position to an instructor position, right? If you so choose, but that's one example we'll need to figure out.
Okay.
As well.
All right. I'm good with that. All right, so that's our thoughts on 9, on 26.
Okay.
And then we're willing to identify an article that we would like to reopen. If you want to identify one, and then we can talk about those two articles.
We'll caucus on that real quickly.
Do you want to step outside?
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll wander. We'll go outside. We'll go outside.
It's a nice as
in regard. Yeah,
it's nice.
I don't think it'll take us very long. Okay, thank you guys for your patience. On opening articles, we would be willing to do one now, with one stipulation that if additional articles aren't opened by the next session, then that opportunity to open a second article evaporates, right? Because what we don't want to have happen is either team to pull out an article in the 11th hour.
Yeah, we don't want to have this linger either.
Okay.
If for some reason, because of people's schedule or something, I cannot identify the second one at the next session, I will call and let you know that I'm running into a problem. But I anticipate that I'll be able to come in and do it next time.
When you say call and let, I mean, that, I think we would want just a firm deadline for when that second one would be open. Because what can potentially happen is we'll move into negotiations of other things, right? And then you say, oh, okay, well, hey, that let's open up.
Oh yeah. I'm good with that. And the people who make that decision are not sitting here today, and so okay. I can't speak for them. But I anticipate that I will have it next time. If you want to say this hard deadline, if not next time, the time after that.
I'm okay with that. And we don't need to sign anything on that. It's just on the tape, right? So
good. That's
okay. And same stipulations would apply if there's a redundancy. If we open up magically the same article, that there's no opportunity to open additional ones.
Statistically, very unlikely.
And I would imagine. Well, it'd be interesting. I would imagine, in addition, statistically, like philosophically or ideologically, it's like less likely we may be open.
So, like, see, I have the secret folded.
Yeah.
Right here. Look at this.
Okay. Right. Well, we can go ahead and turn these over.
Oh, don't see mine opens.
Oh, opens. Okay. That's ours. Now I.
Oh,
did,
we
I,
had the same.
I did print it up. Okay. Yeah. So you guys got six. So they've opened non-discrimination.
So they give themselves.
Okay. I think it's spelled. And we opened leaves.
Oh, leaves.
We can actually give you a proposal on that. It's probably hopefully the simplest proposal in history.
Okay, good.
That we have right now. This is kind of the Where's Waldo of proposals. I'm trying to find what mark we've made on here. It's almost invisible.
Percent.
Yep. Baron wins. Yeah, this is to correct a typo that was included a couple of sessions ago when we negotiated the early sick leave buyback program. Right now, it says that the hours is multiplied by 0.5% of the faculty member's hourly rate of the date of employment. It should just be 0.5, right? Because it's basically saying if you take an early sick leave buyout, you only get half the amount you normally would. If it were 0.5%, no one would take an early sick leave buyout. It'd be 0.005 of what you would normally get.
Okay.
My understanding is that this has been applied correctly at just 0.5 in HR for the people who have taken it. But it's just, that's our, and everything else okay. We propose is status quo.
All right, we understand. Does anybody have any questions about, for Martine? Okay. Now, so, I'm just going to talk about six for a second.
Yeah.
I don't have language, but there's a few aspects of six that I think are contradictory, and there's a few aspects of six that I think need updating. We don't have word for word legacy language in six. We've gotten to six before and had some changes, but still, there's so much going on in the world of discrimination claims and how they're handled. Well, one of the things that we wanted to, you know, for everybody to think about, which is kind of doing something in a different way, is we seem to receive a great deal of discrimination complaints that are referred to the EEO office and then are investigated, and these investigations take a lot of time and take a lot of obvious effort on the part of that office. And what we were thinking is, and some of these complaints we believe to be wholly lacking in merit on their face. So we were thinking, there's one aspect of it, I don't want you to think this is the only aspect of Article 6, but we were thinking about the formation of a review committee. And the review committee would have a representative of the United Faculty of Florida, a representative of the University of West Florida,
and then a subject matter expert, you know, somebody from diversity or something, and they would meet and review these complaints and then make a determination whether it should be referred or not to the office.
Have there been other universities that you've represented or you're aware of that have implemented something like this?
No, but you know, no. I have to say I don't know. They could, but I don't have one off the top of my head. I will say this much. All of the universities are beginning to struggle with this whole process because with the advent of the Title IX obligations, with the creation of the Title IX representatives, and with, you know, kind of the evolving responsibility of the universities to investigate complaints brought against faculty, brought by students. You know, it's becoming a very complicated system. And I know that in some of the universities, they are changing their processes, like, or attempting to change their process through the discovery, I mean, through the negotiation process. For example, I know that at the University of Central Florida, what's on the table now is that instead of grieving an allegation of discrimination, an allegation of discrimination would go directly into the office of
HR.
It isn't the HR, it's kind of like an independent office now that's like equity.
Yeah.
And
well, it's the Office of Equity and Diversity, the EO office within that office.
I know, and Ramey could probably so to speak to some of this stuff too, but I know some of our frustrations have been always that even when you file a grievance over discrimination, it automatically goes to HR, right? It's the same sort of logjam that goes around.
Now, what's happening in these diversity Title IX kind of configured offices is that they're almost arm's length from HR.
Mm-hmm. So, which is the case now.
They're almost like an they're almost like an auditor. They almost are like an independent auditor.
Yeah.
So I think the whole process of how one raises a discrimination or harassment complaint and how that's handled has evolved over the last couple of years. So we want to look at our processes here to see if we can make them more efficient and effective.
We just hired a new EO investigator.
Oh, okay. Okay. We'll look into that broadly from our end. I know we are certainly supportive of streamlining timeline on a lot of these things. When we renegotiated grievance a couple of sessions ago, that was one of our primary goals, was try to streamline timeline. So
you're thinking of a screening like when faculty members file grievances with one of our responsibilities is this really a grievance? Is it really grievable? Is it worth going forward? Your responsibility as an attorney to a client would come in and says, is there really a case here? Is there really enough stuff to go forward? What can be proved? What cannot be proved?
Right.
But you're talking about kind of a clearing counselor or something like that would kind of stop these without will.
Right, to do sort of like a facial review. You know, they wouldn't necessarily, I think, have to get into the interview process and all that sort of stuff, but to say, this is just
this is trivial.
Or this is trivial.
Or
this isn't discrimination.
Okay.
You know, this isn't something that's prohibited by our language in contract or regulation, but is just somebody's with a complaint about anything.
The committee would have to have a staff representative as well because of the AFME agreements and even PBA if the police were involved.
We would obviously have to consult with our legal representatives. I mean, this has a lot of tentacles to it. You've got federal law, Florida statutes, the CBA, right, HR, you know, et cetera, right? So those are all things we would have to, I'm sure, look into.
Right.
And then, you know, it's additionally complicated because when Title IX was implemented, the last time we negotiated on discrimination was to include additional protected classes, right? And that language changed for in non-discrimination. But then, like with our current national administration, they seem to be backing off of Title IX enforcement. So federally, I'm not even really sure where it's standing right now. So we'll look into all those elements. Did you want to caucus and talk about any of that, Tom? Now,
well, Yeah, we can't admit it. I just did have one question. It was just try to understand how you would define subject matter expert. What would that?
Oh, I think we're probably somebody from diversity, the Office of Diversity.
That's, so that's what you meant by subject matter expert, yeah. Somebody who knows title line stuff. Or
yeah.
Not an expert at discrimination, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a,
yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe. Yeah. You know, if they can discriminate expertly.
Yeah. Yeah. In a long history. Okay. Anything else on
six? No, that's what we, that's one of the, that's what we were committed to open right now.
Okay.
Six, and that's what, okay, our initial thoughts on it.
We discussed more about phased retirement. We're glad to hear that you guys agree there's a benefit, I think, for allowing more faculty to participate in that program. We would be flexible to increasing the age limit, right, rather than making it open-ended. We wanted to hear a little bit about just the rationale for why you would not want to make it age limited, or removing the age limit entirely.
Well, a couple things, I guess. I think there's a lot, and I'm not an expert in retirement, but there's a lot that exists that encourages people to retire, to truly retire, mm-hmm, to not work their entire life on the planet, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have to pay an IRS penalty after you're 70,
yeah,
if you don't,
okay,
take out your, if you don't use your retirement benefits. Okay. You know, there's a lot that goes into retirement. I mean, I think this is Mike Battmore talking, the purpose for the funding of a retirement benefit is to allow people to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And to truly retire, I think if you were to take away any incentive to retire at a normal age,
okay,
then you're kind of defeating the purpose of the benefit.
Okay. What we were thinking is something along these lines. Right now, phased retirement runs up to 5 years, right? So when you go into five, there's a 5-year cap. And our understanding from looking at this in connection to Florida statutes and others, that our understanding is that we have the authority within the contract to define like age limits and years of vesting and all of those things. Let's say hypothetically we raise that age to 68, right? 70, something like that, like 68, 69. What we're thinking is you could say up until 68 or 69, you could continue, you would use it as normally implemented, up to that you have that 5-year window on the other end, right? But we still think there's benefit for faculty who are older than 69 to have a transitional period, right? So we could say, we would imagine saying something like, you get 5 years if you're up to 69. If you're over 69, you can still participate in phased retirement, but to a maximum of 2 years, right? Or something like that, right? So you could participate over that age limit. It gives you a window of transition, right? But it might not be the full 5-year amount, right? So something like that, I think, would address maybe the concerns that you're saying.
Well, Jonathan, I don't want to get ahead of it, but whatever you think makes sense,
okay,
to your team, we'll take back and look at it and analyze, okay, it from our point of view.
Were you, we put the last formal proposal forward. So, I mean, if you guys write up maybe next what you guys have in mind, or do you want us to rewrite it? Or
No, you don't need to rewrite it. I mean, I don't really know what our formal response is going to be.
Okay.
I was just exploring the ask. I mean, the only thing you really changed about the current language is uncapped.
Yeah, we just struck.
I'm just expressing an immediate concern over that.
Okay, sure.
And to raise the question, if there was a change to the date to be eligible, were you open to that at all? Mm-hmm. And if so, in what manner? And I think you've answered the question.
Yeah, we'd be open to that, and additionally, we would want to see an opportunity for faculty older than that to participate in a truncated version of it.
I understand what you're saying.
We'd also be willing to increase the vesting period for that. Right now, the vesting is just 6 years. So by making it open in some way to all faculty, we would be willing to trade off an increased vesting timeline.
Okay.
The other side of the coin of that, I think, is that a lot of universities are academics are a little different than just normal retirement. And there are a lot of universities that have opened themselves up to taking advantage of their senior faculty. Duke University built a whole retirement community with faculty next to campus and hires them back for teaching and all that. Of course, it's going to depend on the person's health. It's going to depend on their knowledge in the field and that kind of thing. But there are a lot of universities that are taking advantage of these senior faculty that are not going to go totally retire, but are very important for maybe getting grants and teaching support and that type of thing.
Well, I think it's a good point too, Dean, that as our reliance on grant funding and others affects our Board of Governors metrics, our senior faculty many times who have the connections to bring in those resources. For the instructor lecturer promotions the position you guys, the previous position, I think where we left off last time, is similar to what you were saying today, that the university's preference is for a recurring evaluation similar to an SPE type structure. We had put forward several iterations ago that same type of opportunity using the multi-year contract structure, right, as the basis. My recollection when we initially negotiated that multi-year contract structure was that it was to be used as the basis for, a fuller either promotion or evaluation structure. We would be willing to increase the evaluation side of that for increased compensation side of that. Right now, it's based on the dean's overall evaluation. When you have 3 years of excellent or better of the dean's overall evaluation, you get a 3-year contract, right? If you get a second 3-year contract, you get $1,000 to your base salary. So if someone is continuing to get appropriate evaluations, they receive an extra $1,000 every 6 years, right? So I think you could easily use that as a structure to continue to build on, potentially increasing the evaluation component and also the financial component.
We'll consider that.
Okay. But is your preference? Are you guys going to write up a proposal on that and present it?
I think
we'll wait on that.
Yeah.
That proposal.
Yeah. Good.
And I think that's everything. Did you have other questions?
No, I'm good. We have a couple of dates to offer.
Okay.
We have. Let everybody catch up.
If you get John's schedule squared away, the rest of us
fall
in line.
Yeah, that's right.
Or not. Matters not.
But we matters then.
All right. Shoot.
April 9th in the morning or April 10th before 2 p.m. And April 30th or May 1st. Are those both Mondays and Tuesdays?
Yes.
Okay. Did we pick today because Tuesday's convenient?
Mm-hmm. I think we said, guys said you wanted to do this day, and we said okay.
I think
okay.
Earlier.
I'm fine on any of those days.
All right. Why don't we say, how about the 9th?
Okay.
Looks good.
Well, what time? I'm probably going to be driving over that morning, so and Tom might be driving. I think of you.
Afternoon.
Appreciate that. So how about we say noon?
Well,
that you said that was the morning.
I have to have the morning of the 9th. How about like 10?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't care, 30th or 1st. If
30th is good. 30th is
better?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good.
30th is Monday also, yeah.
Okay, I'm any time that day. So we could probably be later if you want, Tom.
On the
30th?
30th. Okay. Like 11?
Sure.
Is that okay, everybody? Okay. Perfect.
All right.
Get these notices out, and I'll send you a copy of the sign sheet, John.
Oh. That's, I mean, everybody's on the, we have them on the tape.
Yeah.
Okay.